The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, people, it's another episode of Game of Frameworks. I'm your host, Jay Hersko, and tonight we are talking with Kim Antello from Scrum at Scales. Kim, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you for having me tonight. This is great.
So can we give the listeners a little bit about you and your history with Scrum at Scale before we start diving into the full agenda?
Yeah. So my history with Scrum, I've been doing Scrum. I actually found it accidentally. And started doing it about over a decade ago. With Scrum at Scale specifically, I was at GE Aviation and working on their digital transformation there. Jeff Sutherland came in to help them and their digital teams with actually introducing Scrum at their leadership. And he said, hey, I want all of the leadership team to go through my product owner training. And they delegated it down a couple of levels. And so myself, as well as a number of other agile savvy people at GE, we're all together and we found ourselves in a room saying, hey, we know about this Scrum and Agile thing, but we can come to this class. So it was a bit more of an advanced product owner class than what Jeff would probably normally do. And he had us do A3s, which is a typical kind of root cause analysis that you find in a lot of the Toyota production system. And almost all of the people in that class said, our biggest problem is we don't have a chief product owner. So there were lots of different teams that were working on basically the same thing. And we said, we need to have a shared vision. We need to figure out as an organization, how do we deliver things that are meaningful and impactful to our customers? So I took some of the things that he talked about and brought that back to GE Aviation. And from there, I was able to implement 140 teams that were doing basically Scrum at Scale. And we implemented some really awesome things that we called a digital review board, but in Scrum at Scale, we call that a meta scrum, where we had one prioritized list of all of the priorities across the organization. And we had a group of chief product owners who were really focused on delivering the most impactful things to the organization and starting to work together as a team instead of in their silos based off of their hierarchy and their organizational structures. So that's how I started using Scrum at Scale. And then I was asked to come to Scrum Inc. And who wouldn't go work for Jeff Sutherland?
So it sounds like you actually backed yourself into, it was like most of our career narratives, right? It wasn't a planned journey. It was more of opportunity where you were familiar literally at the lowest level. And then from there, it was a step to the right where you got more involved in the framework.
Absolutely.
Okay. So let me ask you this, Kim, regarding Scrum at Scale. If you had to offer up to someone an elevator pitch, right? Mm-hmm. Someone stops you in the elevator and says, oh, Scrum at Scale, what is that? How would you pitch it? What would your pitch be?
So Scrum at Scale is really a context-driven approach to address organizational issues that are presenting the organization from being agile and not just doing agile. So taking those Scrum values and the values from the Agile Manifesto and infusing that within the organization. I can't just do the 3-5-3 and do the cargo cult Scrum, but I actually need to embody the values that are in the Agile Manifesto and the Scrum Guide to challenge people and to encourage them to actually be open and to be respectful and to, you know, be courageous and empowering the organization to do better work.
Okay, so it sounds to me, and I mean, coming from Jeff, it makes sense. It sounds to me there's a healthy thread of the actual intent behind the manifesto and the principles when it comes to the framework. It's not more of a total transformation package that you'll see some frameworks sell them at. And the way you described it, which is perfect, by the way, I'd buy what you're selling. It sounds like it's more of a, you're getting truly into the crux of what transformations need, as opposed to just patching on or pasting on some sort of ceremony and calling it a day.
Yeah, it's absolutely not the fact of, hey, let's just take what you're currently doing and translating that into something that kind of sounds or feels like it might be agile. But we're really saying, hey, leadership, what are you going to do to actually change the culture and empower the people who are doing the work to do better work and to get them to resolve their own impediments and to build a better organization?
Okay. So now that you've made your elevator pitch, right, we're in the middle of a series where we're doing a whole slew of different frameworks. What are some of the attributes at Scrum and Scale that you think make it stand out in a crowd?
Number one, Scrum is for all levels of the organization. It's not just for the people who are at the bottom, you know, providing the value for the organization. We go in and say, hey, leadership, what are you going to do to start to work together as a team? How are you going to address cultural issues and organizational issues? How are you going to remove red tape for the organization? How can we empower the people who are doing real work for our customers and providing real value for the organization? So it's from the top, providing that mirror to them and allowing them to reflect and say, how are you actually going to make this a better company to work for that will provide more value to the customers? So that's number one. Number two is, in Scrum at Scale, we talk about these two cycles and they're two loops. It's not just a top down, but it's listening to the people who are on the ground, who are talking to the customers, who are running into roadblocks, who are running into issues, and filtering that both up and down so that we understand what's the vision, where are we trying to go, but what's real life like? And how do we actually listen to those things and say, you know, hey, how do we need to change our vision? How do we need to change our transformation backlog so that we can make this a better place to work where we can deliver better value to our customers? So it's a feedback loop, not just top down. The people at the top are really there to support the people who are in the organization and driving real value for that organization.
So speaking of people at the top, I will say you're the first representative from a framework, I will say, that I've interviewed that actually brought up the term leadership unprompted and brought it up a couple of times. So, and I'll be completely honest, I don't know much about Scrum and Scale. I don't know much about most of these frameworks, which is part of why this is a learning experience for me. Can you go in a little bit more about that leadership focus, that how leadership, I mean, we all know as agilists, as people who run transformations, as practitioners, you know, leadership is usually one of the harder sticking points and almost most vital to a successful transformation. So can you give us a little bit more detail about that centricity in regards to Scrum and Scale?
Yeah, absolutely. So in many cases, when we go and we're actually looking to implement Scrum at Scale within an organization, and we're talking about a lot of Fortune 100 companies, you know about 3M because that's been a published case study. We've got oil companies as well as other very large historic companies that we've worked with. But we go in and say, if you really want to change and if you want to remain relevant, what are you as the leadership team going to do to allow your teams to remain relevant? So we incorporate what we call an executive action team. And they're basically just a Scrum team that are there and are responsible for removing impediments within the organization. They have a backlog of their own, and it's a transformation backlog. In one organization that I was at, the number one priority on their backlog was employees had a fear to speak. They didn't feel like they had the ability to speak to their leadership and to tell them the truth because everything had to be greenwashed. All status reports needed to have green on them because if I was yellow or red, I was going to get in trouble.
Right, so, the watermelon, green on the outside, red on the inside, everybody's happy. Right, right.
So we're telling them, when we go in and we train the teams, we ask for, what are the challenges within your organization? We ask just Scrum Masters and in general to say, what are those issues, those impediments that are really causing problems within the organization? Are we actually driving people to act as superheroes, or are we incentivizing people to work together in teams? So those are the things that we're elevating to the leadership team and trying to get them to address at the leadership level, and they, and in their own backlog and their transformation backlog, we're telling them that they need to address those things. And those things trickle down, but we're also empowering people to come up with solutions themselves, because executives are really good at creating very complex solutions to very simple problems.
Right, right. So so that's interesting. You actually forced the executives, as this executive action team, I believe that was the term, you actually forced them into a scrum team of their own. So they should be, not only, you know, we talk about, you know, resembling the behaviors that we'd like in our transformations, but by extent of actualizing on this framework, you're forcing them into talking the talk and walking the walk, do you think that has a impact in success, forcing someone who is a two tiers, three tiers above you or I to actually get some skin in the game?
Absolutely. So when we talk to people when they're implementing Scrum itself and you say, hey, you're going to have a daily Scrum, how are you now holding people on the team accountable for what they're doing? Now we're asking leaders to not just say, oh, hey, I sent this email to this person who's maybe hopefully going to solve that problem. I was actually in a large organization and someone was trying to address not having enough product owners for the teams. And he said, oh, I sent this person an email. And I said, her office is next to yours. Did you walk down and say, hey, what's going on with this? Can you get me product owners from the business, specifically in finance, who can help us with, you know, detailing out the backlog and providing the customer feedback for that? So getting them to not just, hey, send emails and status reports and things of that sort, but to get them to be, you know, action-based, and get them to actually respond and be more accountable to that daily Scrum, to the team that they're on.
It creates that sense of ownership. Again, Nassim Taleb, skin in the game, right? You're not just sitting on the outside. You're actually truly embedded, and you are part of the cog that makes the machine turn.
Absolutely.
So aside from that, Kim, what do you think some of the other couple of attributes that make Scrum at Scale unique, things that our listeners should maybe put in the back of their mind to listen to when they go through transformations of their own?
Yeah, so I'll quickly bounce on a couple of things. So when you're building your backlog, hopefully it's context-driven. We know what our number one priority is given what our issues are. So it really is more of a build your own scaling structure based on your context. The second one is the Scrum at Scale guide is in GitHub. Anyone can Google GitHub Scrum at Scale and they can recommend changes to the Scrum at Scale guide. And myself or Jeff or other people within the Scrum at Scale organization can actually accept those merge requests. So go and submit some requests.
That's pretty neat. And that I think would say that tickles the geek in all of us.
Yeah. So two more things to just quickly touch on is the lightweight nature of Scrum at Scale. So it's not applying a bunch of other stuff on top of Scrum, but it's saying what's the minimum viable bureaucracy that we can implement to allow cross functionality across all of the teams that are delivering value for our customers, and how do we continue to challenge that to allow us to deliver the best products with the best quality and also most simple that we can. The last thing that I want to touch on is decision latency. So this is a study that the Standish Group actually reported on last year. And if you're a football fan, people who know Peyton Manning, I actually lived in Indianapolis for a little bit. Peyton Manning and Omaha, they know that has something to do with him being able to make audibles and to be able to make calls on the field. So as a quarterback, Peyton Manning was able to say, hey, how is the defense lined up? That's his competition. And he was able to shorten that decision latency, the amount of time that it takes for him to make a decision, to be able to react to what his competition was doing. He has two Super Bowl rings, maybe not Tom Brady, but you know,
he obviously is accomplished. You can't argue it, right? Personal, anybody with the personal feelings, put them aside. The guy has two rings, right?
Yeah. So that information is kind of stood up by this report that was done by the Standish Group last year. And it shows that teams that have the ability to make decisions within 1 hour are three times more likely to be successful than teams that have to wait 5 hours. So decision latency and having a product owner per team is extremely important, being able to deliver and to make those decisions quickly so that the team can move on and not be stuck.
And that's funny that you mentioned that, because this will take, for those listeners who remember the interview we just did, well, by the time this comes out, it'll be a month ago, with Daniel Mezick, where he talks a lot about decision-making at the lower levels and how that's truly the key to successfully transforming what you're looking to do. Is no offense to all you know, highly important people with impressive titles and, you know, your own offices, but if you really want to impact, if you really want to enable change, you need to empower that decisioning down at the lower levels. And that's, it's one of those vital, almost basic concepts that we almost seem to lose, especially when you start layering layer by layer by layer. And like you said, bureaucracy on top of bureaucracy. One of the things I did want to ask you, so when I was talking to Daniel, and I don't know if this was during the podcast or after, because he and I went on for quite a bit about culture and anthropology after, one of those rare people I would like to run into at a bar and just, I know I'll come home the next morning. And again, the wife thinks you're having an affair. But he's great. He talked about how Scrum at Scale really is, if you look at the math behind it, it's almost fractal in nature, where you build a couple of teams and then you put a level on top of it. And then you build a little bit, and then you put a level on top of it. So it's the same at the bottom as it is at the top. It just grows the more you dig in. Is that, am I, and again, I have no experience at Scrum at Scale. So am I describing it correctly?
Absolutely. So we originally started to use the term of fractal, and it wasn't exactly sticking, but we talk about scale-free networks and the accomplishing the same things. Jeff, as you may or may not know, actually went to medical school at the University of Colorado. And so he used this, or he created this framework based off of some just natural networks that happen within biology and plants and you know, neural networks. So absolutely very fractal in nature, or scale free, meaning that you can scale without adding anything additional. It's free for you to scale.
Right, you're recreating at multiple tiers. You're not creating a whole new role with a whole new operating model, and then try to put another, you know, whiz bang on top of a geek on, and everything gets totally. And then you start selling certificates, and everything gets crazy. We're not going to go down that path though. So if for our listeners, right? So they're sitting in an, let's say they're sitting in an organization, and they have these. They have the transformation on their minds, and they're going through one of these transformations. What instances would you suggest to a listener to say, hey, these are the couple of almost red flags that you would want to say, hey, Scrum at Scale might be your best bet. What are some of those scenarios where if our listeners are sitting there, they can say, you know what, maybe this is the path we should go down, instead of what our expensive management consultant is telling us to do?
Well, I would say if you're not finding twice the outcome and half the time, or twice the velocity and half the time, we have a book on that, just so you know. then maybe you're not doing it good enough. We know that with some of the other frameworks, you can maybe get a 20-25% increase. But with Scrum at Scale, we know that you can actually implement it in many industries. A couple of weeks ago, I was actually scrumming an operating room. We've done it in oil rigs. I'm at a children's clothing place in New York City right now. So it's not just software. You can really implement this anywhere where you actually want to get better results and be able to be more nimble in your organization.
That's pretty wild, because there is that common thread right now in the zeitgeist about, you know, agile outside of IT and agile outside of software. And you hear these things almost like platitudes, like agile marketing or agile education, whatever. The kids show up and they pick whatever they want to do for the day. But you don't hear a lot about frameworks in the same breath, where we talk about, you know, Scrum marketing or that sort of thing. I think I've seen that online. But I'm it's actually interesting for me to hear. We could do another 2 hours on that, just how to apply these sort of a framework type approach in a non-software delivery organization. Because I think that's where a lot of the transformations I've been through, we run into problems where the people who aren't delivering software but are delivering the change have trouble keeping up with, you know, they're not IT natives. So what the hell is a stand-up? Right? Like, what do you mean I got to visualize my work in a Kanban board, you know? So that's really fascinating. Really fascinating. Go on.
Try to coordinate 48 operating rooms within a large hospital. And how do you get nurses and anesthesiologists and neurosurgeons to actually work together as a team?
please tell me there's a book or a white paper coming out on that, because that's something I would that I would love to dig in on that.
Yeah, we're working on it. We're trying to get the signatures to allow us to talk about that.
Right. So let's talk about the other side, Kim. So when it comes to Scrum and Scale, what are some common misconceptions? Like, what are some things that people may think about Scrum and Scale that it's either due to naivete or ignorance or just lack of knowledge?
So the first thing that I would say is this is not a copy of SAFe. Some of the things that we have gotten some feedback on is, hey, you're basically copying SAFe. And that's not it at all. If you look at the diagrams that we have, they're much simpler. There's no new jargon on epics and, you know, features and all of that stuff. We don't care what you call anything. Just like in the Scrum guide, it's product backlog items. And it's really based on a network of teams, very similar to General McChrystal's framework and Kotter's on dual operating models and minimum viable bureaucracy. So we're not at all here to tell you these are all of the things that you need to do, but it's really, you know, what's the simplest thing that you can do to implement this? If you talk to Jeff, he'll tell you that he started using some of these ideas and some of these theories in 1983.
I don't even think I was walking at that point. Was I walking? I think I was walking.
I was definitely walking at that point. In a banking organization where they were working on ATM technology. And he said, as the CTO within this banking organization, he had some really big things that he needed to do. And so he started to employ some of these ideas based on his work in medical school. So it's really minimum viable bureaucracy. It's something that he's been building on since 1983.
So that term, minimum viable bureaucracy, just to give you an example, when we had a representative from Large Scale Scrum on, and we talked about, you know, their thing is not scaling up, but necessarily scaling down. And we asked him, well, how does that go over when you deliver that message? Same sort of question to you, Kim. How does that go over when you're dealing with a client and you say, well, we're really looking for your minimum viable bureaucracy. We don't need all the layers. We want to get to enough to enable change without adding waste in the system. How is that typically reacted to, swallowed, responded to?
Sometimes there are some gasps. Well, what does that mean for me as a middle manager? Other times leadership is like, thank you. We actually have a case study where we were at an oil and gas company, and they were doing an ERP implementation, and they had ballooned out to, I'll say 1,400, that's somewhere around the number. So there were 1,400 people working on an SAP implementation. And the CIO was just like, how did this get to be so crazy? There's got to be just so much waste. So they were able to reduce that implementation by 40% and still get out, I think it was 20% more work on a month-by-month basis. We were at another organization where there were 200 people who were working on an incentive program, and we got that down to 20 people. And when they were 200 people, they had spent 5 years and had delivered nothing. When they were 20 people, they were 6 months and they were delivering things to customers. So yes, scaling down and getting rid of a lot of the waste and a lot of that coordination. But I've never been in an organization where they said, hey, we don't have a big enough backlog for people to work on. So there's generally plenty of work for teams to do. It's just, how do we make sure that we're reducing all of the bureaucracy and allowing people to just be free and go fix the problems that we're asking them to, instead of adding on all of this stuff and status reports and things that aren't really delivering value.
You make a good point when you say it's not like there's no work out there. It's not like we're just sitting around throwing pencils into ceiling tiles. And I think some companies are sold a false bill of goods when someone comes in and says, well, we're going to transform your org, and they see transforming, they think, cost reduction, OPEX reduction, headcount reduction, where those of us who've been through at least one transformation, even if it failed, know that these things never result in a massive decrease in, I mean, I hate to call them headcount, heartbeats, right? There's a massive decrease in heartbeats. You shift them onto the things that really do need that human TLC, right? You automate what you can, and then you move them to the, you know, I need a human touch here. And we've had another episode on like the dark side of coaching, and I think that definitely plays some of it, right? People set the wrong expectation, and, you know, here's what happens. So speaking of the future, right? Where is Scrum at Scale going in the future? I mean, I don't want you to give away get the corporate secrets, but is there what's coming around the corner that our listeners can be paying attention to? They should be on the lookout for things of that nature.
So we have a new CEO that was just recently announced. So Carol McEwen is now the CEO of Scrum at Scale. So that's a new change. And in the last year since we actually announced the Scrum at Scale joint venture with the Scrum Alliance and Scrum Inc., we have 71 trainers who have already been certified as trainers to go out and train around the world. And we've been able to translate the guide into 9 different languages. So those are some things that have recently happened, and we're really looking forward to how does this continue to change the world and the organization and make it so that we can deliver really great Scrum to the whole world and make it accessible, not just in IT, but across all industries.
Wow. Well, and I didn't even think to bring that up, the partnership with you guys and the Scrum Alliance, which I can see putting those two things hand in hand. It makes organic sense. Yeah, that's pretty wild. Okay. So, Kim, I don't want to take up too much time. I know you're traveling. So if listeners want to learn more, firstly, let's talk about this, the framework here. Listeners want to learn more about Scrum at Scale. Where do they go? Where do they find the information? Where do they start digging?
So if you go to the website, which is scrumatscale.com, you can take a look at all of the trainings that are available across the world. There are a number of webinars and things of that sort that are also on the website. We have a very active trainer community. They're very dedicated, not just the people who are at Scrum Inc., but other partners as well. So they're always putting things out there. I myself have been involved in the Denver Agile organization as well, and making sure that we're talking to people. So we're just trying to spread good Scrum across the world and really empower people to solve their own problems and get leadership to unleash those teams so that they can deliver really awesome things for their customers.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And for you, Kim, if people want to find you, they want to ask questions, where do they find you? Any upcoming presentations, conferences, Twitter, LinkedIn, anywhere where they can reach out to you and throw some blind questions? How do I sell my boss on the minimum viable bureaucracy? Which, by the way, I'm going to use that term tomorrow, see how that goes. I'll email you and let you know.
So my Twitter handle is KTelloLady. So KTELO. Lady. And you can find me on LinkedIn. That's generally where I'm posting the things that I'm doing. I will also be speaking at Agile Cincinnati on April the 29th. If you happen to be in Cincinnati, we'll be talking about some fun stuff there as it relates to scaling as well. Yeah, I think that's it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Kim, on behalf of the Agile Uprising, myself, I'd like to offer a sincere thank you to you and Scrum at Scale for taking time out of your busy evening to come visit with us. On behalf of Kim and myself, I'd like to thank all you listeners for tuning in. Once again, there will be a thread about this podcast on coalition.agileuprising.com. So we're inviting all of you listeners to hop in and join the discussion. What did you learn? What didn't you learn? What did you find out about Scrum at Scale that you weren't aware of before that makes you want to dig deeper? Hop into the conversation. Let's talk a little bit more. Until next episode, this is Jay Hersko and the Agile Uprising Podcast signing out.